and welcome to the Kings of Anglia podcast, where we talk about all things Ipswich Town. I'm Andy Warren, and I'm here with a man who had chips before 11 a.m. on Saturday on the way to Hull. That's Stuart Watson.
It's acceptable. What's the problem?
I don't think it is acceptable to have chips before 11 a.m. But you know, they looked all right.
This is coming from a man who was considering pairing a chicken breast with waffles at the OK Diner, the legendary OK Diner that we stop at on the A1 for all Northern games. That's not right.
Well, it wasn't me considering pairing them. They have paired them. Like they've done the pairing. That's done. That's on a menu, the summer menu, I might add. It's November the 19th we're recording this on. I opted not to go for it. Chicken, battered chicken and waffles, you do not eat that before 11 a.m, and even more so than chips, I'd have thought.
Yeah, and then I was disappointed with you on the way home. I think we stopped at Cambridge Services, and you didn't go for what, is it El Mexicano describes as...
El Mexicana.
Apologies. Describes as La Beast, which I believe is a 14-inch burrito weighing a kilogram in weight. So I'll be disappointed if you don't take that on before the end of the season.
Well, you've summed up why I didn't do it. It's a kilogram in weight, and I've got enough of that already. We weren't just out eating yesterday, we were working. We went to Hull for Ipswich Town's 2-2 draw at Hull. They rescued that late on, a very late Jordan Spence goal did that. A bit of an odd game, Stu, I thought. It was an up and down game. Both teams could have won it, both teams could have lost it. Ultimately, they drew it. What was your take on it?
Yeah, mixed feelings, really. I guess the instinct was to come away thinking it was a point game just because of the way the game went. 2-1 down, missed penalty, 88th minute equaliser. It always feels like a point game, doesn't it? But there's a nagging part of me that thinks that it was an opportunity missed against Hull. They'd lost three games on the spin going into it. The natives were restless there, chance against the owner. And when Ipswich went 1-0 up after 6 minutes, I thought they looked really shaky, Hull. And my main criticism would be that Ipswich perhaps didn't go for a killer second, because I think if they'd have scored again during that opening 20 minutes... it would have been 3 points in the bag, probably.
Yeah, I agree. I think when that goal went in, I honestly sat there thinking that they would probably coast it out to a win. We both predicted wins pre-match, and it looked for all the world like that was going to happen. But a bit of a goal out of nothing, the first one. The second one was a... you've got to put that down as an error from Luke Chambers, I'm sure he would agree. And all of a sudden, it was just battling for a point from a game that... Yeah, as we've both already said, could easily have been three.
Yeah, I've just been writing my verdict for the back page of Monday's papers. We're right to sort of focus on these battling, fighting qualities that they've got, Ipswich. It does feel like they've got that kind of underdog spirit about them from a couple of years ago, when they kind of sneaked into the playoffs, really, as underdogs that year. Who's to say that those sort of qualities might take them all the way again, you know, in the most open of divisions for a long, long time, with some surprise packages up there. But there's some limitations there, without doubt, isn't there? There's a major Achilles heel with the soft goals that they're conceding. You're right about the second one. Chambers at fault. He's not been the only one this season. There's been some defensive lapses all over the team. It's not fair just to point fingers at the defence. Until they sort that out, I do worry about some of the games coming up, because you know, they've got some tough games coming up, some tougher opposition than Hull, I would suggest.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I'm not sure if anyone's read the verdict already, you'll see that Stu's pointed out that it may even have been in the points observed after the game, that Ipswich's record against the teams in the top half basically doesn't exist. It's zero points there, and every single one coming against bottom 12 teams, and that's got to be a real concern, especially going into these games now.
Yeah, I think they've played all bar one of the teams in the bottom half. Reading's the only team that they've yet to play from those bottom half sides, and as you say, all 25 of the points have come against those bottom half sides. 0 points against teams currently in the top half. Sheffield Wednesday at home on Wednesday, strangely enough. Villa away, Derby away, Nottingham Forest at home. Still got to play Wolves, who are looking very strong at the top end of the table. As we've been saying for quite a long time, I think once Ipswich have played everyone once, sort of around that Christmas time, we'll probably have a true indication of quite where they're at.
Yeah. You were in with Mick after the game yesterday. Should we quickly hear what the Ipswich manager's assessment of yesterday's game was?
Well, a valuable point, a well-earned point, I thought. I don't think we've nicked anything by any stretch of the imagination. I thought we started well. I thought we let them off the hook in the first 20 minutes when we were... And then they got into it and, you know, they'll complain about their goals and I'll complain about our goals conceding because that's always the way. And first half, I think that certainly they had more possession of it. I thought we were well organised and disciplined and a bit disappointed with the goal. Second half, a far more open game, to be honest with you. And I don't know, but either keepers had that many shots to say, despite the openness of the game. You know, I'm complaining about our second goal, and I thought it was a penalty. I think what really pleases me is having had the penalty saved. It's generally knocks the stuffing out of a team and gives the other side a lift. As you saw, the crowd were up, their bench are up, they're all up, and it's you know, they think they're going to win. Then my legs kept going, which was great, and I think got the point that we deserved, to be quite honest, out of the whole game.
I think he summed it up quite nicely, didn't he, Stu? You asked him to sum it up, and he did.
Yeah, I think succinctly put, you could almost boil that section of quotes down to one very brief quote in which he sort of said, "We might not be the best team going, but we battle to the end." Now there's two parts to that sentence, isn't there? And I think it's fair to say that, you know, it goes back to what we've just been discussing. They've got those battling, fighting qualities, but, you know, the first part of that sentence is we might not be the best going, and that's a fair comment, I think. Rarely outplay the opposition. As I've said many times in our chats, I think ultimately it may lead to a mid-table finish. But let's see, if they can grind something out in these next few games, then who knows, they might just hang in there.
Well, I spoke to Jordan Spence just a few minutes after he scored the equalising goal in a corridor deep in the bowels of the KCOM stadium. We almost ended up in the boiler room, but not quite, we stayed in the corridor. And he was talking all about character and team spirit, but at first he just talked me through the goal, which really was a toe-poked effort.
It was just a toe, yeah. It was just a reaction from Webbo's header, and I like to call him goal-scoring instincts. Managed to find the post and fortunately rolled in. Ten the boys have been a threat for some time, so I'm glad it's finally being recognised with a few goals.
Yeah, a draw, is that what you deserved, do you think?
I don't know. It was a bit of a crazy game, wasn't it? I think that we were good value for our draw, personally. I think we played really well in the second half. They possibly scored their second goal when we were in the ascendancy. But obviously, when they go 2-1 up, it lifts the crowd. They seem to settle a little bit for a while because they were, I think they were obviously nervy. But we managed to stay in there. And I think that when you're always one goal behind, you're conscious of trying to make sure that you can stay in it for late moments like that.
What have you made of Jordan Spence this season, Stu? Bizarrely, he'd scored two goals in his 200-odd game career coming into this season. He's now got three this season, taking that total to five. So he's proving a bit of a threat, but obviously he's probably more likely to be judged on his defensive effort. That's why he's there.
Jordan Spence, I think actually you could argue that his best spell in the team came at centre-back during that period where, you know, they were having to name that makeshift back four made up entirely of fullbacks, and I thought he adapted and coped pretty well in there. He's obviously got the stature for that role. He's no slouch in terms of pace. When he then got shifted back out to right back, I thought he had a pretty tough time. And the Norwich game in particular, I thought he looked pretty shaky. But in the last few games, or last couple of games, Preston and at Hull at the weekend, I think he's improved. He got a couple of assists, did he, in the Preston game?
Yep, one deep cross, which was a really good cross for Goldrick's header.
Yeah, and I think he played the pass for Salinas' goal as well, didn't he? So good in that game, and I thought again, he's reasonably solid, and he's popped up in the right place at the right time to get the goal again at the weekend. So I think he is probably the man in possession of that right back slot at the moment, ahead of Dominic Iorfa.
Yeah. We mentioned David McGoldrick there. He scored the opening goal for Ipswich yesterday, but he also missed a penalty. Stu's come armed with some sheets of paper which will tell you all about David McGoldrick's penalty stats and a few other Ipswich players as well, if you want to share your wisdom there, Stu.
Well, we got asked quite a lot. There was a lot of reaction yesterday after McGoldrick's penalty, which we have to say wasn't the best of penalties, was it? A little bit too down the middle, probably the right height for Alan McGregor to save. And of course, then everyone's asking, why did he take the penalty? Why wasn't it X, Y and Z? I mean, the most obvious one that people are talking about is Martin Waghorn. So my first reaction was McGoldrick's been a pretty reliable, decent penalty taker for Ipswich. So we delved into the stats, found a website that throws up all the numbers. David McGoldrick scored 10 of his 15 career penalties. 6 in 9 for Ipswich now. And we looked back at the two misses before yesterday. Both came within 3 days of each other, actually, in January 2014. A 1-1 league draw against Charlton at home, in which I think you looked up the report and he hit the post in that one.
No, the first one, he scored the rebound. No, you are right.
Yeah.
You are right. No, he hit the post in that one.
Hit the post against Charlton, and then a few days later, FA Cup game against Preston, and I think that was a save, and he scored the rebound.
It was a good save as well, and he smashed in the rebound.
So I think it's a little bit harsh to sort of say that McDavid should be sort of stripped of penalty duties off the back of one not so good one yesterday. I mean, the obvious replacement, if they were to mix it up, would be Martin Waghorn, who was Rangers penalty taker in chief. I think his career record, looking here, is 17 scored out of 20. So he's got a pretty decent record. I'm sure he would fancy them if they did sort of move them on at any stage. But Ipswich have had sort of intermittent penalty takers in between. McGoldrick, Murphy scored 2 out of 3. Pittman scored 3 out of 3. DJ Campbell, going further back, scored 3 out of 3. So they've not done too bad with spot kicks in recent years.
Maybe a bit harsh just to, like you said, just to drag the ball away from David McGoldrick. He's in form, he's scoring goals just like Waghorn is. He'd have fancied it. He looked confident enough, I thought, when he grabbed that ball, and, you know, they miss sometimes. It happens, the best miss. Well, some of the best don't miss, but most of them miss at some point, and I'm sure he'll be back on them at some point in the future. We had a question on one of our Facebook Live videos at the game, actually, regarding David McGoldrick, who spent large amounts of time playing out on the right. That was from Kieran Lewis, who seemed quite frustrated to hear and see that a guy who you could easily argue is Town's most gifted football player is in a position that you might say wastes him.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I read your piece this morning. You did a bit of a McGoldrick watch piece for online and in print. It does feel like he's wasted when he plays out wide. They're playing this kind of fluid front four at the moment, aren't they, with Salina, Waghorn, McGoldrick kind of in behind Garner. And those three seem to be given the freedom to interchange at will. When the game kicked off, it was Salina left, Waghorn right, McGoldrick in the number 10. But very quickly, McGoldrick and Waghorn switched. And I would say the majority of McGoldrick's time was spent wide right. Was it Burton as well? He seemed to spend a lot of time wide right at Burton as well. To me, he's wasted out there, as you rightly say. He does his best damage through the middle, dropping deep. He's not the quickest of players, is he? He's not blessed with pace, so he's never going to take people on and whip in crosses. But I think both Waghorn and Salina, we've both interviewed them, and they both, I think, would say that their best position is through the middle, and everyone likes to be the number 10, don't they? So they seem to be given the freedom to switch, whether that's McCarthy just saying to them, you know, sort it out amongst yourselves, or whether that's a tactical game plan, I don't know. But adds to a sense of overall frustration surrounding David McGoldrick, who on his day can be an absolute joy and pleasure to watch, and one of the best in the division when he's sort of you know, dropping the shoulder and, you know, easing his way past people. But on other occasions, I can find him very frustrating to watch as well when he makes wrong decisions and doesn't see the bigger picture and tries to force the issue sometimes.
Yeah, he can often be found with his head down, can't he, when there's a head up, would maybe see an outside runner. There's so many times when you see runners burn past him and he doesn't find them and he takes a shot, but then he'll do that one time, he'll ignore someone, he'll take a shot and he'll end up in the bottom corner and nobody really cares.
Yeah, interesting one with him. We were asked on one of the Facebook videos the other day about, you know, what's his future with his contract up. He's out of contract next summer, no option on him, one of the few that's got the extra option, so a big decision, I think, both for him and for the club. I think for him personally, does he go and seek his last big contract elsewhere, 3 years, get a bit closer to his Midlands roots, fresh start for him? And do the club also think that it's time to kind of just freshen up a few of the old stalwarts like they did with moving Christophe Bera on last summer? It's a big financial commitment to someone who's struggled with injuries for the last couple of years and is struggling a little bit with consistency at the moment. So really tough one to call. I couldn't really sit here now and say which way that's going to go.
One do you think will be talked about before Mick's future is sorted, or do these all go hand in hand? I think that's a common question that worries fans, that some of the best players are so tied in to a manager who has kind of opened the questions about whether he'll be here himself next year.
Yeah, I think they're all sort of invested in Mick, aren't they? They're players that, you look at the ones that are out of contract, I think especially David McGoldrick and Cole Skews in particular are very much Mick stalwarts. And if I was in their shoes and was thinking about what my situation might be, I'd be wanting to know that a manager that's placed a lot of loyalty and trust in me was still going to be there. So, when do these discussions start with the manager? I'm sure we'll be sat here week after week discussing this one. But yes, they're all tied in together, I think.
Yeah. Another question we had on Facebook yesterday, and you can watch all of these Facebook live videos on our Facebook page, was it EADT Sport? This one was from Henry Singleton, who was questioning what has happened to Freddie Sears. Henry says, prolific during our playoff season, but never recaptured that form. We saw him for about 3 minutes yesterday, so I'm not sure. These aren't the games to judge him on, are they, when he gets 4 minutes here and there, three minutes?
It's a strange one with Freddie. He's, I think in some ways he's become the victim of his own selfless attitude, because Mick McCarthy obviously sort of asked him to, more often than not, to go and do that hard-working role out wide last season, and he does it no problem at all. He goes in there, and you can never question Freddie Sears' work rate. Runs all day, up and down, but I don't think that's utilising his main strengths. You think when he first came in, he was an on-the-shoulder striker that just was sniffing out a chance and was prolific, wasn't he, in those first few weeks and months after they signed him from Colchester mid-season. And it's almost like you've slowly been seeing the sort of confidence drain from him as a finisher, because he's not been in those positions, and so when the chances have fallen to him, he doesn't look like he's going to take them. When he goes through one-on-one, you just don't feel like he's going to hit the back of the net. The amount of times last season where he'd be through and the keeper would save with his legs, or you know, there'd be situations like that. So that's been a shame to see that with Freddie, because he was so popular and was such a hit early on. It's just the way that the style of the team has played. Obviously, when Murphy was here, it was very sort of direct up to him. He needs to play, if he's going to play up front, he needs to play in almost that big man, little man combo, which they haven't been going with for a little while. So maybe it was wise for Mick to kind of take the pressure off of him, take him, you know, out of the team for a little while. And maybe his best role at the moment is to come on as an impact sub against tiring defences and use him that way. But you can make an argument, you know, we've sat here many times and said how Mick McCarthy gets the best out of players. He can kind of elevate average players to above average players. there's an argument with Sears and a few others that he can turn good players into average players by, you know, concentrating too much focus on them becoming hard-working players of you know, of that type.
One thing that surprised me about Sears, and maybe this goes for a few other players as well, and I can understand the argument on both sides, is that Sears hasn't featured at all in the under-23 side. I would have thought for a striker that's out of form, needs to play and needs to remember what it's like to score a goal, that actually playing him in these games might help. I can understand why you wouldn't play him in the games at the training ground, because that can, I guess, can give the effect of a player thinking, what am I doing here? Why am I putting this kit on and playing on a windy Monday lunchtime at Playford Road? But they've played games at Portman Road recently, and it's just surprised me that he's not been given a run in these to maybe find some confidence, generate his own confidence.
Hadn't thought about that, to be honest. It's a good point. Yeah, I think strikers, more than any position, thrive on confidence, don't they? And I think the longer, you know, he always sat there and said that, you know, it's the old line about, you know, as long as the chances are there, when the chances dry up, that's when you get worried. And he felt that his form was good and he was getting chances and said all the right things. But it must gnaw away at you as a striker, because you are judged on your goals. And yeah, it's a good shout. And maybe, you know, maybe get him, if he's not getting the game time in the first team, then why not keep him sharp in the 23s?
And as a highly, highly decorated Football Manager player, that's something that I do. With my Berry Town boys who are flying high.
What year are you in now?
2081-82 season, and Berry Town are dominant. But
as in Bury St Edmunds.
Bury St Edmunds, yeah. Still playing at Ram Meadow, which is significantly bigger. They've taken over the whole car park there, I think. 30,000 champions of Europe. It's nearly time to move on, but that's a chat for another day. But you'll often find my strikers in the reserves though, and they find a bit of form, and who knows, it might work in real life as well.
I'll tell you what, we'll switch roles for the next Town game. I'll go and grab a player, and you can put this to Mick McCarthy, and we'll see if you come out alive.
Yeah, we'll see. I have one more than Mick, but
just saying.
Just going to point that out sometime. we always want to hear from you, so if you have any questions or anything you want to hear us to discuss on, either here on the Kings of Anglia podcast, on our Facebook live videos, anywhere really, on Twitter, just always please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Kings of Anglia is the new name for the podcast here, but it's also a magazine which is available from good news agents throughout Ipswich and a little bit further, I think, and also online. But there's a new edition of that out now, Stu, with an interesting insight into Jonas Knudsen, among other things. What was that like? He seemed to give you a good insight into how he prepares himself and how he motivates himself for football.
Yeah, edition 5 now of Kings of Anglia magazine, quarterly magazine. I think this is probably our best one yet, packed with Ipswich Town content. And as you say, the cover interview is with Jonas Knudsen. So we had a bit of fun with him on the sort of the mad dog theme. I don't know if anyone has seen the front cover yet, but we've kind of got the split face, like Two-Face from Batman, with you know, Mad Dog and nice guy Jonas, because there definitely is two sides to him. So I sat down and kind of explored that a little bit, really. So we talked about his ultra competitive nature on the pitch, which has led to his teammates giving him that nickname, and also about nice guy Jonas off the pitch. We talked about growing up in Denmark. He was telling me about the virtues of hygge, which is you're nodding your head there.
I've never
heard of it, but it's a Danish cultural thing, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. Anyone that's ever been to Denmark, you might not have heard of hygge, but when you do hear what it is, and I'll let Stu explain in a moment, you'll recognise that is the way that people live their lives over there. It's kind of bringing life together and a calming influence. So how did Jonas describe hygge?
Just it's like a state of mind, is it? It's just about, he kind of painted a picture of warm jumpers and sitting in front of the open fire and candlelight. It's just a very sort of chilled state of mind. It's making sure that, you know, when you come in from work, you can kind of switch off. It's about community and family and coziness and calmness. It's a kind of an intangible thing, but just a way of life, which sounded quite nice. So it was good to kind of talk to him about. I think it puts it into perspective, because we kind of think of football players as these robots that should just be training and playing all the time. But it's nice, especially with these magazine interviews, to get a little bit of an insight into, you know, their life away from football, and they've got families and they've moved from other countries or other parts of this country. And Jonas, like most of the players, I would say all of the players at Ipswich Town, is a really good bloke that you could see yourself getting on with away from football. And that feeds back into the stuff that we've been talking right at the start. You know, say what you like about any of the limitations of this team technically, there's no questioning the personality and the character and spirit amongst them.
You had a nice afternoon round at Bart's house, didn't you, for a previous episode, met the family. Very much a family man, Bart, and this magazine is an absolute snip at $3.99, which I think it's $3.99.
It is free postage and packaging.
Yeah. Snip. You don't get much for $3.99 these days. You will get less than half of the big burrito from El Mexicana for that. But it's absolute. Yeah, it's a great magazine, and you just see a different side to footballers that you probably don't get to see the rest of the time.
Yeah, as you say, I went to Bart's house. That was great. His little daughter and son were charging about the house, and Oscar is, I think, is five, is a goalkeeper in waiting. So I was kind of interviewing Bart in the garden whilst having a kick about, and that was nice. Yeah, that was good. What else have we got in this issue coming up? Brenna Woolley, the voice of BBC Radio Suffolk. Quite a few people probably don't even know what he looks like, but have grown up listening to him on the radio over many years. So it was good to speak to Brenna about how he came into radio commentary. So
it's an odd journey. I won't spoil it, but it's a very odd
journey. It's not the obvious path. It involved living in France at one stage, amongst various other things. But that's quite a nice little, even if you're not interested in football, that's quite a nice little career piece, I think. If there's anyone that's interested in getting into journalism or radio commentary, I think that's worth a read.
There's also Portman Pete, who is a character that needs probably more introduction than it's worth. He's an interesting character. Portman Pete has an interesting view on the world, and if you're in the supermarket and you do pick up the magazine, just flick inside the back cover and take a look at Portman Pete.
Yeah, I'd be interested. I'd be interested for some feedback on Portman Pete. I hope drop us a line and let us know what you think.
We'll try and get him on the podcast at some point. Right, last thing. Sorry for slamming the table there. That was a bit of a noise. Last thing. We love football. You all love football, I'm sure. But there are some things about football that we just can't stand. And we found an empty room at Archant Towers, which is now our room 101. And Stu and I have got a couple of things we want to put in there to get rid from football. We're going to put this out for a vote, actually. Only one can make it in at this point. So I'll let Stu pitch his. There'll be a Twitter vote. For anyone listening, there'll be a Twitter vote later on. Stu, what's up? What's up for room 101?
Well, we've discussed plenty of these, haven't we, on our many car trips up and down the country. I think we'll save some of the big hitters for future podcasts. But one this week, and we were discussing it as the players came out onto the pitch at the KC Stadium on Saturday. Presentation jackets.
Presentation jackets. What on earth are they, Stu?
Not having it. It's an American thing, isn't it?
I like American things. I don't like presentation jackets.
Another thing that we have to take from America. There's no need. They come out, they do their warm-up, and they literally just come out with their little zip-up jackets just for the handshakes and the pre-match picture. No need. Room 101 for me.
It is an American thing, and it's an American thing from basketball, which is even more unnecessary because they're indoors. Why are you wearing a jacket indoors? But football, there's no point. And the way the players chuck them on the floor and they get swept up by the kit man,
it's just
bad. The only thing I'll say about Hull yesterday is that there was an immaculately observed remembrance, sort of tribute. And they were standing around a little bit longer than usual. Maybe they could get away with it yesterday, but utter nonsense.
Anyway, my offering is one-man kickoffs. Why, when there's so many things in football that need sorting, did somebody waste the time to rewrite the rules to allow just one player to kick off? What is the point? It doesn't cause a problem. It doesn't ruin anything. But it's just pointless. Why? Sort diving out. Sort goal line technology out properly. Don't bother with one-man kickoffs.
When did this change?
Start of last season?
So in that summer, a load of people, presumably from the FA, sat around a table.
Yeah, they did.
And somebody put their hand up and said, we really need to sort out this kickoff situation.
What's it trying to achieve, though? What? You still get your team generally pass it back and lump it forward out for a throw-in. We love that.
Oh, you've just got another one in my mind. The Ipswich Town kickoffs.
Let's save
to
that.
Another thing now.
Yeah, we'll save that.
Overload the left-hand side. Yeah. Big punt down into the corner. It's never, ever led to anything.
I think that must be ingrained in the club because they've been doing that for as long as I've been watching them, which is a good 26 years. Mm. Mark Venus used to do it perhaps a little bit better than the current crop of Ipswich players do it, but it doesn't work. Kickoffs, one-man kickoffs, room 101. We'll put a tweet out, we'll get a vote on this, which one will go in, and we'll stuff it into that empty upstairs office that we found at Archant Towers here, and we'll see. I'm sure that'll be full by the end of the season.
I think so, yeah. I've got plenty that we're sitting on, and I've mentioned that we might be doing this feature to a few people, and I think we might have a few guest offerings in the weeks ahead as well. So yeah, as you said, if people have got some thoughts on theirs, please do send them in. Any questions, yeah, that'll be good.
Perfect. Right, that's us done. Thank you, Stu. We're back next week. Before then, there'll be two Ipswich Town games, Sheffield Wednesday and then Aston Villa. Hopefully some victories, goals and points to discuss from those. But cheers for joining us. We'll speak to you soon.